SBS music station is coming.
SBS Pop Euro.
Filled with Eurovision hits non-stop.
You want more?
Tune in from the 1st of May
on DAB Radio, online,
the SBS audio app
and SBS On Demand.
You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Wednesday, the 1st of April 2026. It's a day where the Australian share market had some major gains. The S&P ASX 200 surging 2.2%. That's about $68 billion added to the value of the index. We'll have the details with Matt Sherwood from Perpetual in a few moments as we go into more detail of the top consumer finance and market news stories covered during On The Money on SBS World News. But first, higher interest rates are flowing through to the housing market, with property values falling in the nation's two biggest cities, and it may be pointing to a broader downturn. As interest rates rose two times in the first 3 months of the year, the national median property price, according to Cotality, still increased to $933,000, up more than 2% in the quarter. The best price growth came from the opposite sides of the country. Perth up 7.3% in the 3 months to March on low supply, followed by Brisbane. But the southeast corner of the nation saw some weakness. Melbourne and Sydney, the only capitals, reporting a dip in dwellings in that same period, with more expensive homes seeing the biggest falls. To explain, Stephanie Youssef spoke with Tim Lawless, the head of research at Cotality.
So, Tim, we're seeing property values decline in our two biggest capitals. Why is that? And is this a turning point for the housing market?
Well, Sydney and Melbourne have been slowing down for some time now. In fact, it looks like both these markets peaked back in November. Since then, we've seen Melbourne housing values are down about 0.9%. Sydney's down about 0.4%. But as you say, Steph, values are down over the month as well. So it does look like these markets have started to move into a subtle downturn. They're definitely not falling off a cliff. These falls so far are quite subtle, but you know, there's probably more to come given, you know, higher interest rates down the track and what's likely to be a even lower sentiment than what we're seeing at the moment. So there's different reasons for these cities to be moving into a downturn. Melbourne's been weak for some time, so I think it's partially just the fragility of the Melbourne market. But then you've got Sydney, a market that's extraordinarily unaffordable, very expensive. Arguably, it's going to be a lot more sensitive to higher interest rates. Plus, both these cities do tend to lead the cycles. So maybe this is a sign of more things to come across the other capitals, where we're still seeing pretty mixed results, but generally some loss of momentum in the growth rates.
Yeah, speaking about those other capitals, they continue to grow in house values. What's driving that growth in those cities and is it sustainable?
Well, there's a real range of performances here. You've got Perth on one end of the spectrum with housing values rising at about 2.5% month on month. It's actually accelerating into some of these headwinds, which is extraordinary. And this is a story of just really low supply running into roughly average levels of demand. We're still seeing listing numbers in Perth that are about 40% below normal for this time of the year. But markets like Brisbane, Adelaide, Darwin, Hobart, we're still seeing a pretty decent clip of growth in these markets as well, particularly in Brisbane and Adelaide. So I think, again, this is a story about supply more so than demand. The good news for buyers is we are starting to see a little bit of a lift in supply across these markets. There's more listings coming into each of those areas, but from a very low base, and it's still well and truly seller's markets in those mid-sized capitals.
Why do you think supply is lifting? Does it have anything to do with maybe people's affordability being stretched in terms of not being able to afford their mortgage repayments and potentially feeling like they have to sell?
I don't think so. We're not really seeing too much evidence of stress or forced selling. I mean, mortgage arrears are around 1.5% and falling, at least based on data to December. So maybe there's been a little bit of a worsening after two rate hikes now, or 50 basis points of rate hikes and more to come. I think it's probably more, I mean, part of it's seasonal. We do normally see listings rising through the first 3 months of the year and then starting to slow down through winter. But I think to your point, there's probably also an element here where we are seeing prospective vendors becoming more motivated to sell now before selling conditions deteriorate further. We're already seeing some of the metrics we follow, like clearance rates and average selling time, are starting to extend or go lower in the sense of clearance rates, which are now tracking around the mid-50s across the major capital cities.
Banks and economists are predicting another 2 to 3 interest rate rises this year. How do you think that will further impact the market?
Well, clearly higher interest rates are a downside factor for housing markets. It tends to have a dampening effect on demand. And we're already seeing other factors dampening demand as well. Simply less population growth is a factor. Serviceability and affordability are interlinked with higher interest rates. Simply higher housing values that we've seen in a lot of cities make it harder for buyers to access the market as well. And then you've got the impact of sentiment also. So we've seen sentiment plummeting as the Iran conflict extends and starts to impact on household balance sheets. So I think the downside risk is clearly growing. If some economists are right and we see a flurry of rate hikes in the wings, clearly that's bad news for housing market outcomes. And, if we saw three further rate hikes in 2026, it's hard to see that the current growth trends are withstanding.
Why do you think lower priced homes are outperforming higher end properties, particularly in markets like Sydney?
This is all about competition at the lower price points. We're seeing competition amongst mainstream buyers who are increasingly being deflected towards the lower price points because that's where they can obtain a mortgage and demonstrate an ability to service their mortgage. But also competing with investors. On the December data, investors are about 40% of mortgage demand. Looks like they're starting to wind down a little bit, but still quite elevated in the market. Investors tend to play around those lower price points. And then you've got first home buyers, a pretty decent uplift in first home buyers since the expansion of the first home buyer deposit guarantee back in October. So all that competition is very much concentrated below the median, which is where we're seeing that the strongest price growth.
Well, Stephanie Youssef there, speaking with Tim Lawless from Cotality.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.
Starting a new life in Australia isn't easy.
A lot of companies have rejected me.
Sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm gonna quit, I give up.
Work in Progress is a podcast to help skilled migrants rebuild their careers in a new country. You'll hear inspiring real-life stories, expert advice, and valuable tips to help you find a job and advance your career. Work in Progress. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go to the Australian share market now, where the S&P ASX 200 rebounded from its worst month in 4 years. The ASX 200 surging 2.2%, adding nearly $70 billion in value on hopes of an imminent end to the war. 10 of the 11 sectors on the index rose, materials the best, especially gold and uranium stocks, the likes of Newmont up 4.5%, BHP 4.3% firmer. IT stocks also recovered strongly today, only the utilities sector fell. Oil's currently trading at $104.50 a barrel at the market close, and the Australian dollar 69.14. For more, I spoke with Matt Sherwood, Head of Investment Strategy at Perpetual. Matt, so the ASX has had a very strong jump today on hopes the war may be nearing a conclusion. So is it time to buy the dip, or are investors getting ahead of themselves?
Well, they may be getting ahead of themselves because we don't know really what's set to be announced by President Trump. But that said, at last week's trough, the Australian market was down nearly 10%. So valuations and potential entry points have certainly improved. But headwinds are building. So the last thing investors should be factoring into prices and their activities at the moment is a return to normal, because I think the effects of the Iranian situation are set to last.
So run us through those effects. Even if the war wraps up soon, what will those lingering effects be?
Well, the key to the market remains the oil price. And with respect to that, it's not where it goes, but rather where it stays. And a lot of damage has been done to energy infrastructure. And peace does not rebuild pipelines. And this is a problem, as energy inventories have been drawing down in the past 5 weeks, not just in Australia, but of course around the world. And there's also no doubt that every G20 country will be increasing their strategic reserves. So energy demand will outstrip supply, I think, for most of this year. And yesterday, Brent oil peaked at around just under $120 a barrel. And whilst prices may come down from those peaks, we see it only coming down to about $85 a barrel by the end of this year. And that means inflation may be less intense than at the peak price, but is still likely to persist. So obviously that means rates are going to rise in most key economies in the months ahead.
So in terms of rates, you're saying rates to rise. Even the US, there was a lot of talk at the back end of last year that the US is going to see some interest rate cuts. I think that's what the market was basing. And then what about here in Australia? I know yesterday, or the day before yesterday, I think economists at Westpac say that there'll be 3 rate rises in Australia, 3 more.
Well, yeah, well, I tend to think the RBA has probably got at least 2 more to go. We're in May and June, and there's the risk of the third in either August and November. So to me, the domestic policy calculus doesn't change. But in contrast to that, the US Fed, I would argue, have complete optionality because the US has very high productivity growth at the moment, and that means core inflation ex the impact of the tariffs, which will wash through the annual numbers pretty soon, are actually coming down, and it's not too far from the target. They're at about 2.5%. So the Fed does not need to hike rates. And if the US economy weakens unexpectedly in the second half of this year, they could be in a position to be able to actually cut rates if they need to. But nearly every other central bank around the world is having to hike rates first and then kind of hope their economies can withstand the pressure of higher oil prices and higher interest rates. You know, the Fed doesn't have that problem.
So with this environment that we're in at the moment, what are you telling your clients right now? I'm also curious to know, what kind of questions are your clients asking you, and where do you see the opportunities for investors?
Well, what they're asking me and what I'm telling them is really the same thing, and that is all sell downs present opportunities. And 22 of the past 26 geopolitical spikes in oil prices have delivered positive returns within 12 months. And I don't suspect this time will be any different. But what I'm also suggesting to clients is they need to reduce their bond holdings, because for the third sell down of the past 4, they have actually, bonds have failed to diversify equity declines. Only one of the traditional diversifiers has worked, and that's the US dollar, whereas others such as the yen, gold, and government bonds, as I said, they were all negative during this impasse, and they did not offset equity volatility. So really, they were the worst of both worlds, negative returns and not much diversification. And, we in our funds use explicit use of options, and that has worked in all 4 of those episodes. So I think there are some changing rules in portfolios, in the sense of not only how do you generate returns, but most importantly, how do you diversify risk? And I think the performance of bonds in 3 of the last 4 sell-offs has actually crystallized that point.
That is Matt Sherwood there, the head of investment strategy at Perpetual, and he wraps up the podcast for this Wednesday. If you enjoyed it, give it a like, leave a review and subscribe, and don't forget to watch SBS On The Money during the 6:30 weekday edition of SBS World News. The podcast returns tomorrow. It drops after the market close every weekday, and I'll catch you then.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.